Throughout the last 2.5 prokem, we have seen so far two different categories regarding the laws of selling land or selling houses which are considered to be significant structures attached to the ground. The first category is a steachuza, a field which somebody owns permanently, such that even if he sells that field, it will return to him in the yovel year. As well as that, the Torah also gives a right for him to be able to buy the field back from the buyer as long as 2 years at least have passed since the sale took place. From which point, the seller of the field, the permanent owner of the field, is able to buy it back for those years which the buyer bought the field for until yovel. Either way, in yovel, it would return back to the original, the permanent owner. The second category is bati arei chomo, houses inside of a walled city. Once those houses are sold, they do not return to their original owner when yovel arrives, and in addition, one can only redeem the field during the first year since the sale took place. Only during that year may the seller force a return of the field, and he'll refund him for all of the money that he received. This Mishnah continues to discuss the details of this second category of boti ori choyma, houses inside of a walled city. Irishigage seho choymasa, a city, this literally means that the wall of the city is made up of the roofs of houses. And essentially that's just a way of saying that there is no wall itself per se that was built as a wall. However, the houses are very close together, such that the houses are built around the city to form a kind of wall. That's scenario number one. Scenario number two is a city v'she'edem u'kefes chomim emesei shua ben-nun, a city which has not been surrounded by a wall since the times of Yeshua ben-nun, when the Eretz Yisrael was originally conquered. In these two cases, enekvot de'ore chomo, houses inside of such a city would not be considered houses inside a walled city. A walled city is defined by that which has a real wall, and that wall was there at the beginning of Eretz Yisrael being conquered. In fact, even if right now there is no wall there, but it's known that at the times of Yeshua ben Nun it was surrounded by a wall, even then it would be considered a walled city. It totally depends upon whether it had a wall at the times of Yeshua ben Nun or not. Ve'ilu heim bati arei chomo, what would be considered to be houses inside of a walled city? What is the minimum that is required? Shalosh chatzeiros shel shnei shnei batim, 3 courtyards of at least 2 houses each. Mukofes chomo meis Yeshua ben Nun, as long as they are surrounded by a wall, they were surrounded by a wall at the times of Yeshua ben Nun. That would be the minimum size to be considered a city, as opposed to just a few houses which happen to be in the same vicinity. And now the Mishnah cites examples of cities which were known to have had a wall at the times of Yeshua. Kugoin, for example, Katzra Heishonah Shal Tzipirim, the old city of Katzra of Tzipirim, the Chakra Shal Gush Cholov, Chakra which was in the area of Gush Cholov, the Yodfas Heishonah, the old city called Yodfas, the Gamla and Gamla, Gdoid, the Chodid, the Oina, the Yerushalayim. These are all names of cities which were known to have had walls. Now, the fact that the Mishnah adds Yerushalayim into the list is not exactly accurate, since Yerushalayim can never be sold permanently. It's considered to be a city which belongs to all of the 12 tribes of the Jewish people. And so the Gemara explains that Yerushalayim was just put in this list because Yerushalayim is also an example of a city which had a wall surrounding it at the times of Yeshua ben Nun. And the Mishnah ends off, V'chen ke'etzavohen, and similarly other cities similar to these cities which also had a wall at the times of Yeshua ben Nun. Mishnah Zayin. This Mishnah begins the third category of sale of land or structures. Mishnah Zayin. Now begins the third category of sale of a significant structure or a piece of land, and that is what the Torah calls Botei HaChatzeirim, which does not mean houses of courtyards, it means houses of a regular city. A city which is open, as opposed to being a walled city. And essentially, any city which will not fit into the category of being a walled city would be considered a regular city which would have the following laws. The houses which are situated inside of the city would have the following laws when they are sold. We give them the advantage which houses in a walled city have, the koach hayofesh basodos, as well as the advantage which fields a steachuza has when it is sold. And therefore it emerges that nigolin miyad, the houses can be redeemed, they can be bought back immediately, meaning even in the first year, v'nigolim kol shnei asar chodesh, they can be redeemed throughout the first year, kabotim, just like houses which are in walled cities. However, unlike houses of walled cities, which don't return to their original owner in the Yovel year, and once the first year has passed, they can no longer be redeemed. When it comes to houses in non-walled cities, the Yoitzim by Yovel, they do go out of the buyer's ownership when Yovel arrives, and back to the original permanent owner of a Gerin Kesef, and they can also be bought back with money if you minus off the amount of money corresponding to the years which passed since the sale took place, and how many years are remaining until Yovel. And in these two ways, Kasodos, it is considered to be like fields, like a Steachuza. And the Mishnah adds on, Ve'elohim Bochtei Chatzerim, what would be an example of houses in an open city which doesn't have a wall? So obviously a house which doesn't have a wall will be included in this. The Mishnah is coming to include even a case where it does have a wall, however, Shtei Chatzerim Shal Shnei Shnei Bochtim. There are only two courtyards which have two houses each, totaling just four houses, and this is not considered to be significant enough to have the laws of houses in a walled city. Even if they had a wall surrounding the city in the times of Yeshua ben Nun, they have the laws of houses which are not inside a walled city. And the understanding of this is that the regular law given for a house which is sold is this law which is being discussed in this Mishnah. The law given for a house in a non-walled city. However, the Torah said that in certain cases we're going to give a new law, a new set of rules, and we're going to apply that to a particular number of cases. A case of a walled city. Now, if you can't fit into that category, then you automatically go to the regular law, which is said for a regular house. Mishnah Ches, the final Mishnah of the Masechta, talks about the Levim, and Kohanim, the tribe of Levi. And unlike all of the other tribes, all of the other Shvatim, they did not receive a particular part of the land of Eretz Yisrael as an inheritance, as their portion of the land. Rather, they were given 48 much smaller pieces of land within the portions of the other tribes, of the other Shevatim. And the Torah decrees that surrounding these cities, there needs to be 1,000 amos of empty space, which doesn't have houses, nor does it contain fields or anything. Rather, it is left empty, and that's considered to be something which beautifies the city. And the next 1,000 amos outside of that are also designated for the Levim to use as fields as opposed to for housing. In addition to that, the Torah also states that a Levi city can never be sold permanently, and therefore even once he sells a part of the city or his house, it can always be bought back. The Mishnah starts off by talking about a more complex case of Yisrael, a regular Jew who comes from one of the other tribes, one of the other Shevatim, Sheyorash es avi imo Levi, who inherited a house from his mother's father, who was a Levi. He was the closest in line to receive the inheritance from him, and he now owns a house inside of the city of the Levim, but he himself is a Yisrael. The Mishnah says, Eina gel kaseder hazeh, which seems to say that he does not redeem according to this set of laws which have been stated until now. Until now, we've been talking about the laws which apply to all of the other tribes, not to a Levi. So the Mishnah seems to imply, if we read it simply, that he does not have the laws of a regular Jew, but rather the laws of a Levi, so even if he sells it, he would always be able to redeem it again. However, the Gemara actually fixes the Mishnah's language and says that it should actually state, Eino goyel elo kaseder hazeh, that he can only redeem according to this set of laws that we've been talking about until now, which means that he does not have the status of a regular Levi who owns a house in the city of Levim. Since he himself right now is not a Levi, the original owner was a Levi, but right now the current owner is not a Levi, he therefore does not have the laws of a Levi, and if he sells it, he would be governed by the laws which we have discussed until now. V'chein, and similarly, likewise, Levi Shoresh Savi Ima Yisrael, a Levi who inherited his mother's father, who was a Yisrael, so he now owns a house inside one of the other cities of the other tribes. Einogel Kaseder Hazeh, he does not redeem, he doesn't have the laws of the regular laws which a Levi would have. Rather, he too follows the laws which have been discussed until now. And that is to say, as the Mishnah now immediately explains, that only if you are a Levi and you own a house inside one of the cities of the Levim would these new set of laws apply, which the rest of the Mishnah is going to discuss. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Kibote Ori HaLevim, because the houses of the cities of the Levim. This Pasuk is clearly talking about the cities, that it depends upon which city it is in. And a different pasuk just before that in the Torah says, "V'asher yigal min halevim," one who comes to redeem from the levim. That implies that it depends upon the person, not upon the city. And we learn from there, "Achi helevi of arya halevim," that this only applies if he is both a levi and the house under discussion is in the cities which have been designated for the levim. Divrei Rebbe, that is the opinion of Rebbe. However, the Chachom say, the matter is only stated, and it all depends only upon the city of the Levim. Just like this pasuk, which the Mishnah itself quoted, implies. And therefore, even if the current owner is a Yisrael, because he inherited the house from the previous owner who was a Levi, this new set of laws would still apply. Continues the Mishnah, in Eisen Salim Migrosh, the people of the Levim, of the city which they have, they are forbidden to turn the area designated for fields, that 1,000 Amos, into an area which will be left empty for the sake of beautifying the city. Velo Migrosh Soden, nor can they turn the inner 1,000 Amos surrounding the city, which is supposed to be for empty land, they can't turn that into fields. Velo Migrosh Eir. And they also cannot turn the empty area into part of the city and build houses there. And they can't turn part of the city where there are houses into empty land. This is learnt from the Pasuk, that one cannot convert different parts of the city which are designated for different purposes into a different thing, to be used for a different purpose. Om Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer said, and we are going to understand that Rabbi Eliezer is just explaining that which was previously said. He's not arguing. When are these words said? This is specifically for the cities of the Levim. However, for the rest of the cities which belong to the other tribes, one can turn the part of it which is designated for the field into an empty area, because the empty area beautifies the city. And that itself can cause people to come and live in the city. However, you cannot turn the empty area into a field, because then you are diminishing from the beauty of the city. Migosh Eir, one is able to turn the empty area into part of the city by building houses over there. If you expand the city itself, that's even better than just beautifying the city so that people live there. Veloir Migosh, however, you obviously cannot turn the city itself into empty area by destroying the houses, Kadeshul Yachrius Ari Israel, in order not to destroy the cities of the Jewish people. And this reason is also a reason for why we want to keep the empty area around the city instead of turning it into fields. It should be noted that there are those who understand that Rabbi Eliezer is arguing on the Tanakhama, and according to the first opinion in the Mishnah, the Tanakhama's opinion, these laws would apply to a regular city as well, even if it does not belong to the Levim, that you cannot convert any parts of the city into something else. We're going to understand more simply that Rabbi Eliezer is just explaining the first opinion. Now, we learnt in the beginning of the seventh perek that it is not advisable, at least, for a regular person who is not a Kohen or a Levi to make their field into a hekdesh or to sell it within 2 years before the Yovel, because the process of deducting from the amount that one pays to redeem it, based on how many years remain until the Yovel, that does not apply during the last 2 years before Yovel. And therefore, one would have to pay the full price of 50 sela, which is essentially the price which the Torah set for buying the field for 50 years, even though it's only 2 years before Yovel and the field is only being bought for 2 years. But as it may, certainly none of that applies to Kohanim and Levim, who have different laws, and therefore Kohanim and Levim are able to sell their houses, or the truth is here we're referring more to a steh achuza, to their permanent pieces of land. They're able to sell that forever, even in the 2 years before Yovel year. The galim la'olam, and like we just learned in this Mishnah, they are able to redeem their field forever, and once they sell it, it would always remain their permanent field. They'll be the permanent owners, and they're always able to buy it back. Shenema, as the pasuk says, geulas olam tiel alavim. There will be a permanent right for the Levim to redeem and buy back those houses and lands which they sell. Solik Maseches Erchim Mazel Tov Mazel Tov. We begin Maseches Temura. What exactly is the concept of Temura? If somebody designates a animal to be bought as a korban, as soon as he does that, the animal has holiness and sanctity to it. It's forbidden to benefit from the animal for one's own needs, and that animal needs to be bought as a korban, as a sacrifice. Tamura occurs when somebody who already has a designated animal for a sacrifice, he brings a different animal which does not yet have any holiness or sanctity to it, and he declares that I want this animal to be as a substitute and in exchange for the animal which I have already designated as a sacrifice. And to do such a thing is forbidden by the Torah. However, if somebody does do that, the law and the concept of Tamura states that the new animal which he said he wants to be the exchange does become sanctified, with the exact sanctity which the other Korban had, and still does have. Essentially, that which he wanted to do works, however it does not work to take away the sanctity and holiness from the animal which was originally designated as a sacrifice. And therefore it emerges that both animals will have the sanctity, and both will need to be brought as a korban, or as we'll see later on in the Masechta, the new exchanged animal will not always be able to be brought as a korban, but it will have sanctity. Now the way that the Mishnah chooses to phrase this concept is hakol mamirim. Anybody can cause tamura, they can affect this outcome of tamura, that the new animal will also gain sanctity, but without taking away the sanctity from the first animal. The Gemara explains, what does it mean? Everybody is coming to include somebody who I might have thought would not be included, and that is somebody who inherits his father's sacrifices, and he is obligated to bring those sacrifices as a korban, even though monetarily he's not considered to be the true owner of those animals. He's obligated to bring the animals, and we're going to see later on in this Mishnah that one is not able to cause an outcome of tamura on somebody else's korban, or using somebody else's korban. So I would have thought that the same would apply to this inheritor, because he's not the true owner of those animals. And so the Mishnah says, we learn from Pesukim, as the Gemara explains, that even such a person would be able to affect an outcome of tamura. But yeah, the main point, that's what the Gemara explains from this extra word, hakol, that anybody can do this. But the main point of the Mishnah is that one can cause an outcome of tamura, echod anoshim vechod noshim, both men and women, even though the language which the Torah uses implies that we're talking about a male. This is not meant to be specific to exclude women. Now the Mishnah elaborates on the first two words which the Mishnah just stated. Hakol mamirim, anybody can affect an outcome of tamura. We translated this very precisely for how we want to explain the Mishnah, but one could have understood and translated these words to mean that anybody can cause an outcome of tamura, meaning he is permitted to do so. Not that it works, and therefore the Mishnah clarifies. Loish adam rasha lahomer. That's not to say that one has got permission to cause tamura, ella rather the intention is she'im heimer. That if he did do tamura, he said that I want this animal to be a exchange for the original korban, then mumar, the tamura outcome is affected. And it works. Although it doesn't work to take away the sanctity of the real sacrifice, it does cause this new animal to also have that same sanctity. The Sovik Zaraboim, and the one who violated that prohibition, would receive 40 lashes, or 39 lashes. This is the regular punishment given for most prohibitions. Now, this is not so simple, because the rule is that whenever the Torah says a prohibition, and as well as that, the Torah says, if you do violate this prohibition, then you now have a positive commandment, a mitzvah, to do something in order to rectify that prohibition. By the Torah providing that mitzvah, that is understood to be in place of a punishment. That you are able to, so to speak, fix that prohibition which you violated without the punishment. Now, when one violates this prohibition of tamura, the Torah says that it now has sanctity, and it would need to be brought as a korban in certain cases. So I would have thought, logically, it would fit into this category of things which would not receive malchus, would not receive lashes for violating that prohibition. This is known as a lav hanitak la'aseh, a prohibition which is fixed by that which the Torah provides to do after that. However, it's learned from Pesukim, or for whatever reason, as the Gemara explains in more length, this does not fit into that category, and that's why the Mishnah has to tell us that one would receive lashes. Kohanim can cause an outcome of tamura only on their own korbanos, which they are bringing, and a Jew who is not a Kohen can cause a tamura outcome only on that which he himself owns. The point of the Mishnah being that one cannot cause tamura if he talks about an animal which doesn't belong to him. Even if the animal which he's talking about that he wants to be the exchange does belong to him, if he's saying that it should be the exchange of a different animal which doesn't belong to him, which is a sacrifice right now, then Temura would not work. Now, the law is that there are certain korbanos, like a korban chatos and a korban osham, which are bought for certain sins, and rather than the meat of the korban being totally burnt on the mizbeach, or being eaten by the owner, the one bringing the korban, for these korbanos, the meat of the korban goes to the kohanim who are serving in the Beis HaMikdash for them to be able to eat. So I might have considered them to be the owners, such that if they would declare an animal to be in exchange for a korban chatos or a korban osham, which doesn't belong to them, since they do have rights to the meat, it would work. However, the Mishnah says that is not the case. Kohanim do not affect an outcome of Temura when talking about a korban chatos or a korban osham, which doesn't belong to them, even though they're going to get the meat, and not even with a firstborn animal. There's a mitzvah to give one's firstborn animals to a kohen, and once it belongs to the kohen, it is fully his. And he is obligated to bring it as a korban, but it's considered to be his korban totally. And even then, surprisingly, the Mishnah states that they cannot cause temura from that animal. Why can they not cause an outcome of temura from a firstborn animal? It totally belongs to them. Rabbi Akiva said, Chatos v'osham matana l'koyein. A korban chatos and a korban osham are gifts given to a koyein, because they get the meat. V'habuchar matana l'koyein, and a firstborn animal is also a gift given to the koyein. So, ma chatos v'osham ein mirim bohem, just like a korban chatos and korban osham, they cannot cause an outcome of tamura, even though they have rights to the meat, and even you agree with that. Afabuchar lo yimrenu boy. So to a firstborn animal, they cannot cause an outcome of tamura. Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri said to him, "Mali einu meimim b'chatzos v'osham." That's not a comparison, because the reason why you can't cause an outcome of temura for a korban chatos and a korban osham is because she'ein zochim ben b'chayehem, they don't become the owners of that animal, of the meat, whilst the animal is still alive. They only get the meat, and that's once the korban has already been bought. Temura is talking about a case where the korban hasn't yet been bought. Can you now compare that and learn from there to a firstborn animal, that the kohen becomes the owner of the animal whilst the animal is still alive? And when he makes the temura declaration, he's talking about the bechor, which has been given to him, and it's his. Rabbi Akiva explained to him that the truth is, I have a different source. And that is, it's learned from the pasuk. The pasuk says, v'haloik v'arnemar, surely the pasuk already says, v'hoyahu temurasi yekodesh. So when one states this whole declaration of Temura, what is the outcome? It, the original sacrifice, and its exchange will both be sanctified. The Torah is comparing the original sacrifice with the exchange. And we learn from there that the exchange, the new animal, will only gain the sanctity if the original sacrifice is in the same situation as it was originally. Hechon kedusha chol alav beveis habaylim. Where did the sanctity come into effect for the original korban, the original sacrifice, Beveis HaBailim, whilst it was still fully owned by the original owner who had that animal and designated it as a korban? After Temura Beveis HaBailim, so too the new animal, the exchange, can only gain the sanctity if the source of its sanctity, the original animal, is still in the possession of the person who was originally supposed to bring it as a korban, or the person who is still bringing it as a korban. In a regular case, that is so. However, when it comes to a firstborn, since when the firstborn gained its sanctity, it did not belong to the kohen, it is not able to cause an outcome of temura once it is now owned by somebody else.